You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It used to be hard to find the exact auto parts you needed, and that meant spending a lot of time at swap meets. It's a different game now when you can order exactly what you need from eBay Motors. They have 122 million parts, so you can always find the right fitment. Spend less time searching and more time building with the eBay Motors app, or visit ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
It's the bluest room in town. Yeah, they're actually funny.
Welcome back into another edition of The Kickabout here on The Blue Room. I am your host, Rob Vera. Joined this week by Les Roberts and Hannah Farrell. Just before we hit record, I was commenting on Les's shirt. So Les is wearing a shirt from a Serie B. I don't even know how to properly say that in Italian. Is it like beh? Probably Syria beh. Yeah. I mean, and we started getting into like reaching that level of hipster where you're wearing obscure European club shirts. Because I am over the last few years I have delved into the world of the WhatsApp chat, and when there is a 6-hour time gap between you and most of the people on your chat, you can pull it up at random times in the middle of the night when you've woken up, and all kinds of conversations have started. Les, I have been several times, Les, over the years where a conversation about football tops has certainly football shirts in general has certainly begun to dominate the conversation. Obviously I'm doing a poor job podcasting because if you're listening to this, you can't see what I'm seeing, but I am looking at a very handsome, svelte Les Roberts in is it a Venice shirt? Is that what you said?
Venice FC. Yeah. It's actually Venice FC, which is unusual.
I feel like that's probably not how the locals say the name of the club. So why don't you read what it says on the shirt, Les?
Yeah. Oh, it says the Venezia Football Club. I mean, this doesn't
Venezia.
Do anything, does it, really?
Look, if we're going to be authentic Italian here, which clearly the three of us are qualified for, I would say that you have to use your hand, you know, and you have to say Venezia, you know, like everything is this, boobie and babre. I find that there was like, did you guys have that show Family Guy there by any chance? Is Family Guy a thing?
Yeah, okay. Massive.
Okay, so I remember one episode where Peter decided to grow a mustache. And he decided that having a mustache welcomed him into this club of men who have mustaches. And he went to this some sort of Italian deli. And now that he's a mustache, he's smart. You know, he just knows everything. And he says, so this guy starts speaking Italian. And so Peter just decides, I'm going to speak Italian to him, despite not knowing any Italian. And he goes, boobity bobity, boobity bobity, boobity bobity. He just starts yelling. They just start yelling at each other because the guy thinks Peter's crazy and he's got the mustache. And they're both just, you know, exhorting wildly. Anyway. That's the sort of non sequitur that is very kick about. Hannah, you, on the other hand, my dear, you look like it's very cold inside where you're at. So tell me the story.
You know what I think this is for? Well, why I've got this on. I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning and I've been working nonstop since about 5:30. So just for reference, it's now 7:30 in the evening. So I've been working for 10 hours straight. I think I'm just tired and this is like giving me like a hug while I'm working. It's like very comforting. So I think that's why I'm wrapped up, to be honest. I think I'm a bit fragile. I've been awake too long.
You do look exceptionally warm.
I am. I'm toasty. Yeah. I've got another like long sleeve top on underneath this and tracky bottoms. So I'm...
Can I just say you're doing working hours all wrong, you know?
Why?
Getting up at 3:30 to start at 5:00 and still be working.
No. It's not by choice. I had to be at work for 5:00. Then I was in work 5 till 11:00. And then I've been working from home 12:00 until 5 minutes before I joined you guys. So, whoa.
I mean, Les, I feel guilty. I know a little bit about Hannah's work schedule because she talks to me about it sometimes. Or she's told me about it. I kind of feel guilty having her come on this, knowing that she's just worked this horrible day. But until she tells me no, I'm just going to keep asking her to come on Kickabout.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I take it as a compliment that you're going to exert whatever little bit of creative energy you've got left for this. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm just it's a sunny day here in Oklahoma City today. It's sunny, but like, you know, I don't know the Celsius, but it's still pretty cold. We'll just put it that way. It's Celsius cold is what the temperature is here, despite the sun. But I am wearing a blue T-shirt. Actually, Les, I remembered because of a post-match I did with Matt at Goodison. This is the same T-shirt I was wearing. Of course, this is my regular rotation, but this is the same T-shirt I was wearing to that Watford game. No, not was it Watford?
Yeah, it was Watford.
Yeah, the season opener that one time. And I just was like, God, this is one of those shirts. Like, I feel like most guys, and I don't know if this is true, Hannah, for women as much, but I feel like every guy has a 2 to 3 staple T-shirts that just, regardless of time and space and what have you, are always going to remain a core part of their wardrobe. I don't know if that's true for women in the same way, but I can't get rid of this T-shirt. It's too cold.
I think it's nice. Apart from me, I've got a really bad shopping problem, shall we say. And I don't, like, I buy new clothes constantly and don't keep clothes for that long. It's a bit of an issue. Something normal people do, but I'm not one of them people. I'm impulsive and like to buy everything I see. So
yeah, I'm kind of similar as well.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of rotation going on, but I have got one T-shirt I bought, I want to say about early 2000s. Does anyone remember the make Duffer from like the early 2000s? There was a make big over here.
I was about two then.
Did you say the McDuffer?
No, Duffer, just Duffer. Duffer.
Oh.
The full name was Duffer.
I was like, is this some kind of terrible McDonald's sandwich that only exists in the UK? I wasn't sure. All right, go ahead.
Blackies. So this make was quite big at the time. And I saw this T-shirt in the Duffer section. So I was already looking for T-shirts anyway because I used to love them from there. And it had Badder on it. I was like, if this says Bing, I have got to buy it. And it was a Badder Bing T-shirt with the logo. I've not worn it for years, but I cannot part with it. I've still got it. It's not going anywhere.
You're talking about the Bada Bing from Sopranos?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's got like the woman on the
silhouette. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. So I've not worn it for ages, but I just can't part with it. I put it on every now and then and I'm like, no, I'm probably a little bit too old for this now. It doesn't really. So
I feel like, I don't know. I love, I'm glad we have a female perspective on this, Hannah, but you know, on the one hand, you could probably view a strip club t-shirt as being a bit lowbrow, perhaps a bit sexist. But if it's a fictional strip club that's part of what is considered golden age television, like The Sopranos, which is, you know, widely regarded as one of the best TV shows there, I feel like it's a little classier on some level. I could be wearing it and be like, I know what this looks like, but it's from The Sopranos, so don't worry about it. You know?
Yeah. I mean it's not the coffee strip joint either,
isn't it? as strip club t-shirts go. I don't know, Hannah. How do you
I feel like I'd have to see it to make the judgment. I feel like it's all very dazzle what it actually looks like, if it is.
What would you think if there was a fella knocking about in an X in the City t-shirt? Or Angel.
That'd be a bit scared. You're speaking of X in the City, I remember I was walking through town on my own, and like the like people who tried to get you in from outside, some lad came over and was like, do you want to come in, girl? And I was walking on my own, and it was only about like 9 o'clock, I think. I was on my way home from work, and I was like, no, of course. Come in.
What was he inviting you into?
Like the scattiest strippers in Liverpool.
Oh.
On my own. With a little backpack on my way home from work.
Yeah.
It must have looked like that was gagging for him. No, I didn't feel like it was with my little glasses on and everything.
I mean, I feel like Hannah was probably using very sound judgment right then, but there is a part of me that's sort of like, you should have said yes, just to have a story to tell, just to be like, you know what? This is a terrible idea, but I'm going to say yes. and I'm going to have a story for Kickabout. So next time someone invites some strange man late at night invites you into a seedy strip joint, Hannah, you need to consider what's good for the show.
Post-COVID, anywhere I get invited, I'll go. So if that's a gritty strippers, I'll go.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Man, what a start. So we were... We'll probably talk about Everton in a little bit. Hey, Everton won the other day, and it's awesome. And in case anyone needs to hear me say it again, I've totally turned around on Michael Keane. I'm a big fan. I like him now. It's fine. You know, I don't want to fight. There's no Yerry Mina battle to fight today. Everything's good. Life's good at Everton. So we'll get to Everton in a bit. But speaking of what I teased on a little earlier, I think that part of the magic of doing a podcast with people that you speak to not only on the podcast but you're friends with, you have drinks with when you're across in a different continent, in my case, but or you're on, you know, more frequently, of course, on WhatsApp with or whatever, is that we get into some really interesting topics. And I don't know how this came up. I think the thing with WhatsApp, but as I said before, the whole time gap thing, is that I will be working. And then, like most people, I will take a second where I'm like, I should check my phone because who knows what kind of conversation's happening on WhatsApp right now. And I'm sure my bosses would appreciate hearing that. But I'm getting everything done. If any of my coworkers are listening to this, all the work is getting done on time. But we were in a conversation the other day, and somehow there was somehow a conversation that got brought up about people who slide into DMs and send you guys weird messages. And I don't remember, Hannah, you might remember how that whole thing started.
Yeah.
But I don't totally.
So you know what it was? There was basically a girl who posted a picture in an Everton shirt, and we were sort of laughing at some of the comments, which were a little bit thirsty. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of got onto the point that I have too had a fair few thirsty DMs from some Everton dads.
I bet. And then it spiraled out into everyone telling their story, because this is our Blue Room group chat, and so we had, like, Kate was on there talking about this too, and just the kind of, I think we've all at some point gotten odd unsolicited messages from complete strangers. And I will tell you that as someone who is not I don't really have any other frame of reference, I'm not you know, I'm not famous, so I'm sure a famous person would say, oh, I've got a million stories about, you know, complete strangers messaging me and wanting to hang out or do whatever. But I feel, though, in general, as the stuff that I get is uncomfortable at times. Sometimes it's just odd feedback on my job on the podcast, which is fine. It's some of it is some of, like, there's this one guy who messaged me a few weeks ago. I can't remember. I know I shared this with Mark because he and I were talking about it, something specifically, Les, but this guy decided to write me this. If it had been on a if it had been like on a computer screen, it would have been like a 2-page long, what he considered to be a constructive feedback message to me about my speaking style and my, how, you know, you're always on the cusp of making a good point, but then you just keep talking. But I really like you, and I just want you to know that if this is too, he kept saying, if this is too much, just tell, you know, whatever. And I just kind of took it in, and I'm like, okay. I wanted to spoil it for him and be like, you should know I get paid $0 for this. So if I am not up to a professional level, let me assure you that there's a reason for that. But anyway, what's funny about it, and he knows if he's listening, which I suspect he is, and I'll tell you why here in a second. I want you to know, dude, that A, thank you for listening. I am, anyone who listens to me ramble on for whatever reason about Everton or whatever, thank you. But B, I appreciate it. I don't know that I have much more to add to what you've added. I'm fully aware of my flaws as a public speaker or a podcast speaker or whatever. So he said all this to me, and I'm like, okay, thanks. I think the worst thing I could have done was respond with basically the response of acknowledging I got it, but not addressing any of the points. Like I was not going to debate with him about how I speak. I get corrected on my spelling quite a bit because, you know, we didn't invent English. So I get told by people like Patty and his minions about the grammar correction and
Patty's minions.
You spell defense with a C, mate, you know, like shit like that. I'm like, no, we spell it with an S, and I'm not gonna, you know, it's just like it'll autocorrect. Anyway, so I get those sorts of things, which are at the end of the day harmless, slightly annoying. Like that guy, I made a joke on the long con that I did with Mark a couple weeks ago, just kind of a random allusion. Remember, this is a podcast that went on a full 90 minutes, maybe more. I mean, it's a long one. I made some passing reference to this message this guy had left me about people DMing me to correct my grammar or whatever. He then sends me another one after listening to the long con and said, like a paragraph of like, hey, I deserved that. I know I shouldn't have bothered you. I hope, I really enjoy all the work you do. I'm like, and I just didn't respond to him. And now I'm responding to you, dude, if you're listening. I'm not going to say your name because I'm not going to be that guy.
This is like a proper, like, out.
Like, dude, it's, I'm not responding, not because I hate you or anything. I'm like, I just don't know. I have nothing to add to that. You're like, I say like, and you know too much. I'm sure I butcher plenty. If I don't know shit about football and they let me do a football podcast for this many years, I'm fully aware of all of these things, guys. You don't have to tell me that, but any feedback is fine. Just, I don't know how to meaningfully engage. Now,
see, I was just going to say, this is the thing. So I started this with like, oh, you should see my DM request.
Oh, and I'm then about this, to yours.
This opens a rabbit hole because it turns out everyone else has got quite, horrible DM request. Mine were just a bit creepy, but I can't say mine were mean, so.
No, and I wouldn't consider these mean. So mine are like that, or, and Les, I know you have probably experienced this from some of the same people. I'd say there's a Venn, Blue Room listener Venn diagram of people who, for instance, will message you about, hey, I'm going to be in America, we should get together, or I'm going to be like a few hours from you, which that, hey, that, don't start a thing by saying, hey, you've never met me, but I'm going to be a few hours from you pretty soon. Like, don't, that's okay, man. And then they're like, we should get together and have a beer or drink. Like, I'm going to hang with you guys whenever I see you, okay? Hannah, I've now known via this this platform for about a year, probably, Hannah, but we haven't met in person. Les, I've met multiple times. Matt, Patty, the whole gang, Dave, even Dave. Seen them all a bunch of times. But, like, if I've never met you, like, if we run into each other, like, I've run into people at Goodison Park who heard me talking because, you know, not many people sound like me at Goodison Park. And they'll be like, oh, you're that guy. I was in Pittsburgh once and some guy heard me at a bar with my brother. And they're like, you're the guy in the blue room. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Because we were watching an Everton game, but still. Yeah. Those sorts of things make me slightly uncomfortable. Now, I'm a guy. Those are nothing because what Hannah deals with, what Kate deals with, what women in my life have told me they deal with, the amount of unsolicited advances that you guys deal with is amazing to me and sad. But it started, Hannah, as you said, with like Everton Twitter is a subculture and below it are a bunch of little sub-subcultures. And one of them is the quote, hot Everton girl who wears Everton stuff. And or just the girl who wants to, you know, the girl who has a big social media profile. And I don't always know what the end game is. And I don't
Can
think
I
it's
just
my place
add,
to question
this
it.
Is not me flogging that this no, is one of my new profiles.
Not. Hannah's not one of these people.
No, this is kind of sad to count this.
But that I think that little subculture has fostered this whole thing of like, if there is a woman on Everton Twitter, and let's be honest, Hannah, there are a lot of female Everton supporters out there. But when I talk about, quote, Everton Twitter in the way you would talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever, there are not as many women. There just aren't. But those that there are, it seems like so many dudes have zero problem just sliding into your DMs and being like, And Hannah, give an example of what like the introductory message from a lot of these guys is, because they think that they're sounding innocent when they're doing it, but it's so not innocent.
What was, you know what? Should we just?
Oh yeah, just pull them up. You got them.
Obviously, I'm not gonna.
You should keep them all. You don't have to use the names, but you should keep them all because I think it'll.
They
always...
just send me requests because I'm like, oh. Hey, somebody I follow liked one of your posts, which led me to your profile. You're stunning, and I love your hair color. Have a great day. That's one.
Wow.
So, wait, Hannah, I'd
you
like
are
to
so
start
smart,
with the beginning.
As well as pretty. Lol, with four hearty eye faces.
Oh, my God. Someone I know liked one of your posts. Like, what
that's
the
amazing,
fuck, dude. That's...
A bird who knows a lot about fussy, hearty eye faces.
Oh, see, that's my favorite bit, Hannah, is where they're like, they think they're complimenting you, but really it's the most sexist, backhanded thing. Like, I'm amazed you got a brain that works to know about football, you know? Like, are you guys enjoying my terrible English accent?
I think we need more English accents, Rob.
That was like an hello, governor type of accent. yeah, so many goes on. Let's see.
See, this is why you have to keep your Instagram private. Like, that's my...
Yeah.
That's the line I draw. Twitter is open because, really, I don't talk about anything on there, show anything on there that's anything but Everton and a few, like, you know...
Hello,
Trump's going to kill us tweets, and that's about it.
Hello, lovely. You have lovely eyes. How does he know?
I mean, that is a stone cold classic, that, though, isn't it? You know?
I know, but like, I just
bar or on social media.
Just want to add, I'd say 80% of these fellas are old enough to be my dad. Just gonna put it out there. I'm 22.
Heavy. Rob, me and you are old enough to be a dad.
Technically, yeah. If we'd had a slightly more misspent youth, we would be old enough to be Hannah's dads too.
It wasn't the way you said dads as if it was like together. Like a yeah. couple.
Hey, like a nice couple. Hannah, you could do a lot worse than Les and I as your dads, all right? There was a TV show over here when I was young in the 80s called My Two Dads that was not about two gay men, because that would have been too edgy for television. It was just about two friends who each might have been the biological father of this girl, but they decided not to find out and then just raised the girl together, which made no sense to me whatsoever. Okay, so Les, related to this is, okay, so we have the DMs, and I know that you've had a certain guy or certain guys who are just very friendly with you on Twitter in terms of wanting to engage your personal space. But the one thing that blew my mind recently was it a Toffee TV video or something?
Yeah.
This is the best part. And okay, on Toffee TV, Hannah, I don't know if you heard about this or saw this in the chat,
but
there were these dudes, there were these commenters, and I'm guessing this is YouTube, right? These commenters had decided to use the names of Blue Room personalities for commenting. Like there was Les Roberts, there was Mike D'Ascia. Who else? What there? I think there was at least one more.
No, Sy had been impersonated on Twitter in the past.
Okay.
I think on this Toffee TV one, it was just me and Mike. But the first I heard about it, Baz sent me a message. Baz from Toffee TV sent me a message saying, "Is this really you commenting on our video?" Oh shit, what's someone put? I thought someone had like put some abuse, like you're a pair of knobheads or you know, something really like that. So I was like, God, no, what can you send me a screenshot? What is it? So he sent me a screenshot and it had Les Roberts Blue Room in the comments to one of the videos. But the question they'd asked, as Mike said, you know, if you're going to be someone else, you would post some abuse, wouldn't you? You'd put one's name through the mud as being that sort of person who abuses people online. But they just ask, how close is Cabana to fitness? So that's the perfectly normal question anybody could have asked.
So why do they have to be you?
Yes, why do they have to be you?
And what made them think, you know who's asked this? Les.
You know what it is? You know what it is, though, Les? Is he probably thought, all right, the YouTube comments section is the wild, wild west, right? These guys are probably going to not notice. I really need this Jean-Philippe Gabamin question answered. And by the way, Les, I also am curious about this too. So using your name will help me get it. Let me know. But what's funny is that like that person thought to themselves, you know, I don't really have a chance being, you know, Cy Jones or whatever the hell his name might have been. All right. I don't have a chance to get my question to be validated enough to get Ted or whoever Baz to answer my question. But if they think I'm Les Roberts of the Blue Room, and that was my favorite part, is that it was Les Roberts Blue Room EFC or something like that, they're gonna see that and go, ooh, a VIP has just stepped into the room. I'm gonna answer this question. Like, A, that's awesome on some level, and a compliment to you, Les, is that someone needed to know about Jean-Philippe Gabamin's fitness that much that they were willing to pull off a ruse of saying Les Roberts is the type of person who has enough cultural cachet to get me this answer. I hope that someone is, I'm going to be on the lookout now. I might just start watching Toffee TV just so I can see if anyone decides to impersonate me, which I would find to be the height of compliments. But how did you feel? Did you feel violated, Les? Did you feel, did you feel flattered? How did this make you feel?
I felt a little freaked out at first, but now I am considering employing an agent, to be honest. To deal with all the obvious media appearances that are come flooding in on the back of this.
Yeah.
What was the person who impersonated Mike saying?
I don't know. I didn't see that coming.
hopefully
it was some abuse if it was from Mike.
Yeah. I mean,
the shoe fits.
It would be on brand. That would be very on brand.
I did really think, why on earth would anyone pretend to be me? It's dead strange.
Yeah.
Really odd.
Yeah, I don't really know what being me would get anyone online. It doesn't get me much.
I could get you on a date with Everton Dar if you want that, if I can interest you with that.
I just want to pick up something.
The only thing I want to get out of being me, I just want my photo with Yeri Mina and I'll leave you all alone. That's all I want. I just want to meet Yeri, get my photo, and then I'll never ask for anything ever again. But
I just ask a quick question about the Everton Dar? Because basically,
I knew you were going to ask that.
Let's
get demographic. I'm 40 odd years old, I've got kids, and I sit in the park end. I am the archetypal Everton Dar. Yeah. Is it really a state of mind more than a state of being? I would suggest it is. I reckon you can have 20-year-old Everton Dars, to be honest.
Hmm.
It's like being a wolf. you can be a Scouse wolf.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you do fit the category, but I don't know. We don't know what we are doing with the pages of girls and toffee t-shirts.
I don't slide into the DMs of people I know this way.
Yeah.
Hannah, how do you got some confessions there?
Oh man. Hannah, like, I don't know, and we're speaking of this and framing it in terms of like of the whole weird, because I could say that this is about Everton, but it's not. I mean, this is just, I hear this all the time from women that I know, or, you know, they'll just get random messages from dudes. And I always wonder what the end game is here, though. I do occasionally hear about people who met on Twitter or met on Facebook, and I'm really blown away by that. And I think the worst outcome of that at times is that that exception somehow proves the rule to these guys. And like, look, you never know. If you don't take a shot, you never know. If I just message Hannah, she might be like, you know what? I wasn't going to respond, but you know what? I need to get out. Let's have a date. You know, I just wonder what their end game is, Hannah. Like, what if they start off by telling you that you've got beautiful eyes and you've got a brain for football, what do they expect you to respond with? And maybe that's another follow-up question. Have you ever responded to a random stranger's DM on Twitter?
No.
Or Instagram or any of that? Okay.
No.
It's probably smart.
I'm quite antisocial unless you know me, so nothing would ever entice me to do that.
Yeah. So. Well, as your as one of your hypothetical dads, along with Les, I can tell you that I think that you are taking a very smart approach to this. It's so bad. Look, it's so weird because sometimes I wonder, like, and this sounds strange to say, like, I do occasionally marvel at the fact that I somehow went from being a guy on Twitter who would occasionally respond to Matt and Patty, you know, back, God, 6-7 years ago, whatever, how many years ago. And then to the point of just getting someone to say, hey, do you want to do this? And then now I'm doing this weird podcast talking about unsolicited DMs to Hannah's inbox and stuff like that. But, I love engaging with people who are into the Blue Room, on Twitter and then normal ways. But I just have to say, like, it's not really personal, but if you're messaging a person you've never met and asking them to hang out, before you hit send, just pause for a second and think to yourself, is this really a good idea? Because some of you who are listening to this may have even done this to me, and I will tell you, I am an absolute joy to have a beer with. Les can tell you, but I also sort of feel like we didn't just jump to that, Les. We had to, we met, we shook hands first, we talked.
Courtship going on, yeah.
Court me. I'm a romantic. Maybe I'm old school like that. I was born technically in the 70s, so maybe the way I look at the world is different. But I'd say technically because I was like, no, I was born in the 70s. You're right. There's no technically. I was born in the 70s, but I was born in like late June of 79. So like barely, because sometimes you say like, oh yeah, I'm a child of the 70s. Well, I'm a child of the last 5.5 months of the 70s, whatever. Yeah, I'm really a child of the 80s. You know.
When I've tried to say I'm a 90s baby, I was only there for 2 years, so I'm not a 90s baby.
Whoa.
See? Yeah. See, this is what makes me feel old. Like, it's weird how Hannah, I love Hannah on this podcast, Les, and there are times where she makes me feel young because I'm like having this very normal conversation about whatever, and then there are times she says shit like that makes me feel old as fuck. So anyway, all right, so the moral of the story, guys, is leave Hannah alone. Don't DM her
and like, don't ask to meet up with Rob if you're in America.
Progressive presents Married to Your Home.
If you want to leave me for another house, I totally understand.
House? Where's this coming from?
It's just, I know there's some newer homes on the market.
I didn't even know that, because I'm not looking.
I bet those other houses don't have a crack in their foundations.
You know that crack doesn't bother me.
No matter how much you already love your house, you'll love it more knowing you could save big bundling your home and auto with Progressive. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and third-party insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Go.
Not, yeah, like...
And stop impersonating Liz.
Yes.
You know.
Please.
Or start impersonating me, because I could really use the confidence boost right now. That would be good. No. No, I just think that we can all... And this is the last thing I'll say on this, or I'll ask you guys on this. Do you think that being locked down for this entire year on some level, and again, the lockdown means something different in different places, and I understand, but just generally speaking, being less social, we've all been on devices and talking like this more. Do you think it's made us, do you think we're going to have to take some time to sort of thaw out from all this in terms of how you engage with people? Because I think people are weirder online because they've just forgotten how to be human with other people in a normal, conventional way.
It's made me, like, more content with, like, I'm a proper introvert. Like, I'd seem a bit like an extrovert if you know me, but I'm a proper introvert.
Right.
Like, I love just being on my own, doing my own thing. And lockdown's made that worse. Like, I'm so content just not socializing, basically. And I think I'm going to, like, proper struggle to, like, force myself to act in my 20s when I get out of this,
yeah,
and not keep watching Top Gear with my mum with a cup of tea and a hot water bottle.
I think I'm far too content spending time in the house as well.
Yeah.
It's
nice.
Yeah, I'm at the stage now though where like I need to be in bed like just after 10 o'clock and I'll get up at like 7. I get out of sleep and I'm like, I'm so happy with that. And
yeah, everything I need is here. Why would I go on?
Yeah.
But you guys are built for the new world.
The one thing I've noticed, so I was obviously lucky enough to get a ticket to the match. Not to do with any Top TV or Blue Room contact I got on my dad. I was lucky.
Yeah, you get to Goodison and they're like, I'm sorry, Les Roberts has already picked up his ticket.
But yeah, I was lucky. On the one hand, I was lucky to get to Goodison. On the other hand, it was the one game we lost in December.
Mm.
Can't have it all. But that whole experience was quite weird. I've sort of alarmingly settled into watching football on the telly, and I hate that it's sort of become that for me now because I've got no choice. It's kind of like, well, the game's on soon. You kind of look forward to the game being on telly in a different way to the way you used to when you could go the game. And the whole experience of going over there, obviously it was different because we were getting our temperatures taken and there was all sorts of protocols for getting in. We're all out at the ground. It was different to a normal match day. It was very odd though. I felt a little bit uncomfortable. Same when I went Christmas shopping. I found the whole thing quite exhausting. Even though town wasn't particularly busy, it was quite busy but not packed. I just found the sort of going into shops and being around people, it was all a bit unnerving. Not to the point where you're having panic attacks or anything like that, just a little bit odd and quite exhausting. So I think I'm sort of thinking, what's the first gig going to be like that you get? Not
that's
socially distant.
And that's everyone, the one I think about.
Yeah, is it going to be dead weird and a bit... And how you gonna feel being like in people's personal space?
Yeah. Well, people here, so they're just now starting to get the vaccine over here. I imagine it's somewhat similar there. Have you guys gotten yours yet, or do you?
No.
Still, like, we have to wait until probably.
It's all different categories. Yeah, it's different categories. So over 80s, and if you work in any line of health and care.
Yeah,
or like same. Pharmacists and stuff like that. There's a calculator
Mosey.
You can do. any of you else mingling with all sorts. You can do a calculator online here. And if you put in like all your age and your health and all that, and it tells you when you're meant to get it. And I should have it by September this year, apparently.
Oh my God, that long. Jeez.
But my granddad got his first dose today, which is nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So. My stepdad got his week or 2 weeks ago, which has only made my mom hate him a little bit more, I think, because she really wants hers. I'm kidding. I just mean that, you know, that's an odd situation. So my stepdad is like he's in his 70s, but he's a double lung transplant recipient. And so he was way high on the, you know, on the list. And my mom is just kind of like, she just is waiting for the email message saying it's time for her to schedule hers. But
my mom's a bit like this. So my dad's due to get his by mid-February because he's got diabetes. And my mom's a bit like, so when am I due, man? And I'm like, you're right down the list. It's like, you're like June.
I know. My dad's 79 now. God. And he's diabetic, and so hopefully he'll get his soon. But you know, the waiting is the hardest part. But back to that point, Les, you know, you mentioned gigs and stuff. Like, that's the thing that's so challenging is that on the one hand, in your head, you're kind of like, well, all I need is this vaccine and then I'm going to personally feel free on a, in a way that I haven't in a long time. I mean, we'll all still wear masks and do whatever we have to do for a while, but you'll know and you'll have that feeling of and it's mental, you know, but you'll have it in your head that you've got this freedom. But I've always been convinced that it's not going to be so easy for us to just snap back to the world that we lived in, because I will tell you that the thing that I've missed the most that I really took for granted was going to concerts, man, going to see live music. And
I can't even remember what it's like to be in that situation now. Do you know what I mean? No. Like, I feel that far removed from it. Like, the thoughts of going to like I go to Glastonbury every year, the thoughts of like being in Glastonbury, I just find so strange now, because
it feels stressful to think about it, doesn't it? A little bit. Even.
And then it makes me feel sad because where we're at now, with like, it's like, Britain's on fire. It's still so far off us even dreaming about these situations that it makes me feel even shitter.
Yeah. So. I was watching it. There was a program on the other day about Glastonbury. I think it was all the 4 o'clock in the afternoon act. So it was like Ash, Lionel Richie, all those.
Yeah, your legends. Last I saw Lionel, it was so. Yeah,
were they show. Were these like the old performances from?
They do a legends slot on the Sunday, and it's the happiest point of the weekend.
And Kenny Rogers getting shirty with the whole crowd was brilliant.
Because
they were all singing along to one song, and he was like, "You've been stood there for half an hour not moving, and now you're swaying." It was like, "Oh mate, you probably only know one song. You're lucky you know that." Anyway, but they were doing all like, you know, the sort of overhead views from the helicopter and stuff.
That's insane, yeah.
And it was so odd to see it. Like, I'm thinking, will it ever, or how long will it take to get back to that point? Because there's so many people there, which you can't even get your head around now.
No, it's unbelievable. And like the things like the rabbit hole and all stuff like that, when you're literally crawling through little tiny things with people, like, we're never going to get back to a situation where like things aren't like that. I don't know. It's just really sad, isn't it? And like, think what the Pyramids crowds like, you literally are like that with people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't imagine being in that situation now.
Even if you're, I think, and that's the thing too, is even if they tomorrow opened up a normal show at a club or whatever that I used to go to, you can have people in there, but everyone's going to be thinking about it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, you'll be around people, but you will be thinking to yourself, I haven't been around people like this for a long time. Because the things you just took for granted before and didn't think about, now you've spent a whole year thinking about constantly in terms of avoidance of this disease. So I don't know that you can just snap back to forgetting that. You know, I've become conditioned now to stay, like, whenever I'm in the market, just to go grab go grab some bread, grab some milk, whatever. If a person walks near me without a mask, which, yes, that, even though there's a mandate here in our city about masks, people all the time just flout it and be like, I'm not wearing my mask inside or whatever.
No one's as easy though.
I do that thing where I back off and then I look at them like, you motherfucker, I can't wear your mask. And, you know, like, I don't want to feel that way about people. But man, it's just like, I was in the store the other day and I heard this woman and her husband and her kid from out of town. Like, they live in the suburbs or whatever. They weren't wearing masks, and a guy at the store came up to them who worked there, told them that you had to put your masks on. And they went on to this whole thing about how masks don't work and that they just don't believe in it. And, you know, or do we really have to put, like, I don't believe in it. Like, I don't believe in Santa Claus. You know, I just, people like, and having said all of that, I do, when you've spent that much time kind of keeping your distance from people, to then go back to a state where you don't, it's going to be interesting. And I don't think it'll, like, even going to Goodison right now, like, I'm excited. Les, you got to go to a game, but everyone's spread out. Like, I've been to Goodison three times now, and every single time, especially because of how old the stadium is, and when you're walking in, it's people like me have to kind of bend down and kind of crouch through. And halftime, my God, halftime is just it's just a melee of people. It's the first time I go back and do that, it's going to feel weird. I will probably just have to do it to get used to it, but it's going to feel weird.
You know what's going to feel strange to me? That only thought about the other day. I can't remember the last time I had a conversation with a person I didn't know when I've been out and about, because it's like, oh, we've all got our masks on. Oh, can't get close to each other. And I can't remember the last time I had like friendly small talk with a person, which is really like, shit when you think about it, isn't it? Like, even when you're on the bus now and everything, you've got to be loads of seats away from each other. Like, it's not even like a little friendly smile and like you're all right to people anymore. It's like, don't look, everyone's got the masks on. So it doesn't even boil down to that, doesn't it?
That's small talk, actually.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I spoke to somebody I didn't know.
Yeah. That's mad.
Yeah. And you guys live in such a, and you may disagree with this assessment, but I've only, you know, I've been over there now three times, and, you know, Liverpool is such a friendly place, as far as what most people here would probably think about England or Europe or what have you. Liverpool, everyone's so nice and friendly, and I've never really gotten shit from any strangers there. And you can make small, you know, you could bump into someone and say, you know, talk, and but it's just not that way in every part of the world. So then you go through something like this, and I just wonder how much of that has changed forever. I hope Hannah, to your point, it's not. That would be really sad. But anyway, all right, well, let's talk about Everton just a little bit to end things off. As I call it, the Matt Jones quota of time. No, it's a joke. It's a joke. And in fact, if you're listening to this, Matt wants to do a little impromptu pod on Sunday since we don't have a game. He said, hey, we should resurrect the transfer pod this weekend. And I'm like, we don't have any. Have you heard? Is there a transfer story of any kind that
you're just
going
to talk about Branthwaite?
I'm like, yeah, I can talk about Branthwaite. I can go off on the Mosey Vera diatribe about Wilfred Zaha again. I mean, I can do anything you want. And Matt's like, yeah, we'll just talk and pod. We'll get weird with it. I'm like, all right, cool. I love that Matt said, by the way, Les, we can just get weird with it, because I feel like that's what I've brought to this thing. It's just my sincere belief that, like, who cares? We'll just figure it out. But anyway, I want to talk about a little bit about Everton, and I want to ask a question that is, it's a loaded question, but I think it's something that we've got to talk about that I think is weird because of how much affection we have for this player and everything he means to the club and what have you. I kind of asked this the other day, but it's less about, I think it goes beyond just worry and just a question of what we make of a really good Everton season contrasted against a player who is underperforming. And that's Richarlison. I want to talk about Richarlison for a little bit. It's weird to talk about a goal scorer not scoring, because you can have a player like him who does so many other things so well that if you talk about their goal scoring, it almost it feels like you're already starting off with a real negative, a real almost like an insult to the player. And that's not really what I want to do, because I said something on the post-match the other day that I ended up thinking about a lot, which is that, and we keep saying this, it's sort of like how in past seasons where, you know, I think it was right after post-lockdown, we'd had those first matches where, at the end of last season, which feels like 2 years ago. I can't even remember now. But we did the whole thing where we were like, you know, Everton are only technically 4 points out of a Europa spot. You know, we would do that hypothetical thing of like, oh, we could theoretically, you know. But this season feels different because I actually do feel like we're in a real position to do something. But with players, I think we do that too sometimes. And I don't know how many times it's been said, but I think it's interesting that we're now still saying this in January. Everton are having the best season that any of us can remember in a long time. I think it's sustainable. I don't think it's a fluke anymore. I don't think that we have guys playing out of their heads to make this happen. I think it's just a bunch of guys in a squad who've all just gotten better under a really good manager, right? The exception to that is Richarlison on some level, just based on the fact that just based on the idea that Richarlison, for all the great things he does, is a goal scorer who is not scoring goals. So we've been saying this thing of, look how well we're playing, and Richarlison hasn't even started scoring yet. But I want to make this distinction because I think it's important to. Just because he has not been scoring does not mean that Richarlison has not been hugely integral to our success. And we saw what happened when we missed him for three games, and there's something to be said. I mean, we just recently won our first game without him. I mean, there's something to be said for all the other things his presence means, even if he's not scoring. But having said that, and Hannah, I'm going to come to you first because you look like you're just so antsy to say something. But having said that, there will come a point, and this is the expectation that is placed on great players. I believe there will come a point where doing all the other things, and we used to talk about Calvert-Lewin this way, but doing all the other things really well, a goal scorer has to still score. And if he's not, there's a problem. And we have to just be honest about the fact that there's a problem and figure and ask ourselves, why is there a problem? Well, why isn't he scoring? Because I don't think Everton can get to where they need to get this season without him at some point turning it on in terms of the goal scoring. I say all of that with all the love in my heart for a guy who I still feel is our best player. And that's a weird thing to say, but he's on, so you have one league goal this year.
Yeah.
Think about that. I think it was the Palace.
Leicester. Yeah.
Leicester.
Yeah. Okay. Got two league goals. All right, Hannah, tell me how you feel about Richarlison, because I think we've gone from the, oh, it'll all sort itself out, to now we're mid-January and he's not scoring. So what's your level of concern? I'm going to keep asking this until he starts scoring, but what do you think it all means? Why isn't he scoring?
So I'd say it's only after it's only in the past week when I've generally started to be concerned and not just sort of the benefit of the doubt type of thing hasn't got DNA, which I do still think we've got to hold off on any judgments until that partnership is back in front of us. I think that will show a lot of truths of whether that is one of the key factors in it. But I just go back, remember when we did the live kickbot on YouTube in summer and we were saying who we're most excited to see, and I was the only one out of the four of us who didn't say one of our new signings. I said Richarlison because I'm so excited to see how much he progresses with all this talent around him.
Look how wrong you were.
So that's where, when I sit back and think of that, I'm just a bit like, whoa. But then you still got to remember that first game he came back after this three-match ban, I think everybody within about 5 minutes tweeted like, right, well, that's the issue, not having Richarlison. So obviously, like everyone, it's been, what, about three dodgy games, albeit the worst games that he's had for Everton, and it just looks like a lack of effort. It just looks like a lack of effort, and I don't know why, because he's always been the most hard-working player on the pitch, to the point that you'd be laughing almost at leaving last season, being like, oh my God, is there a position that lad doesn't end up in? Is there something that lad doesn't go for? It used to be sort of like, you'd be like, fucking hell, there's nothing he won't go in for, there's nothing he won't do. And I just feel like that is sort of dwindled a bit, but I don't know why, and I'm more gutted, if anything, because I say I was like, think how good he was playing with these players around, and this time she was playing with players like Schneider and Rans and everything, and what he was doing for the team. So I was like, look, with all these around him, he's gonna have the best season ever, blah blah blah, blah. So now it's just a bit like, what is the missing link? Because he's been yearning for fast-paced competitive football. Yeah. That's what he says he was going to leave us without us. So
he's been yearning to have better players around him, right?
Exactly.
Like, that was the whole, yeah.
So it's just a bit, like, it is a bit, it's just confusing. But for me, I think we all need to sort of take a step back a little bit. Like, obviously, we're not the ones who do it, but I've seen a lot of people on Twitter. I can't remember what was the first game where he played really bad. Was it West Ham?
He wasn't great against West Ham.
I think it might have been. No, I feel like after that, I saw loads of people tweeting, like, sell him, I'd get rid of him now, make a good promo, everything. Like, oh, that's absolutely ridiculous. I think we need to remember that partnership that him and Dina have is, like, flawless at times, you know what I mean? So I think everyone needs to sort of take a step back and see what he's like. And then also, he hasn't been available, and he might have other fitness in, he might be getting more fatigued, who knows. So I just think now that the sort's going to be a better dynamic, we can make a judgment in the next few weeks if we ever have a run of games again without stopping and starting because of COVID. But I think then we can make our judgment more on it. I don't think it's like the point where it's like something's wrong, something's going massively wrong. I just think things have changed in the squad, in the team. Let's see where we're at in a few weeks type of thing, maybe. But then another thing might be, and it sounds weird to say, I know he's not scoring goals and all that to impact, but down to the efforts and all stuff like that, did he look so much better last year because the rest of our team was so poor? Now that we've got 11 players on the pitch, but okay, well, I won't say 11, but you have at least 9 out of 11 players on the pitch putting everything into it. Does that look like he's doing less now because there's other players doing it? Whereas last year, he was the one who was carrying the baton and the only person doing that, really. I don't know, it's just another way of looking at it, isn't it?
Yeah, and Les, before you speak up, I think Hannah brings up a really good point, because there's a part of me that wonders, is this almost like a to bring up Wilfred Zaha again, you know, for years he's scored goals, and sometimes I've wondered, is it because he is so overly relied upon to be all of the scoring for Palace that he becomes that player? I feel like we talked ad nauseum over the last couple of years about how we're going to lose Richarlison at some point because he's scoring goals but he only gets one or two chances a game and he's having to work so hard and he looks frustrated, what have you. I think the thought was, well, he's going to come into this season and just really flourish. And again, I don't know that on the one hand you could argue that if there are more good players that he should have to carry the same load. But this is still the player that I believe Carlo Ancelotti at some point was talking about. You know, he should be aiming for 30 goals a season. He's that talented, what have you. So, Les, my question to you is, and this is a little blunt, but even if Richarlison does, and believe me, I view all these things as being valuable. I'm not as concerned about the effort. I think sometimes he can look frustrated, and people equate that with maybe sometimes there not being an effort there. But that's all in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. But even if he does all the quote dirty work and all the other little things well, even if he's created some assists, you know, he's had some assists this season. I mean, I think he's done some things well. Can you call a season, and I'll just put out an arbitrary number, but let's say he ends the season with 7 goals this season. Can you really call, that's not a successful season for Richarlison by the standard that is set for people like him, for players like him, who are, for better or worse, they are considered goal scorers. If he's not scoring goals, I don't think you can consider it a success. And I just wonder what the root of that is. I don't know that it's all just down to luck. I don't know if him being part of a two with in a 4-4-2 with Calvert-Lewin was a huge part of this, or being the main guy. Maybe being put out left more is not, it may be better for the team in terms of him creating plays, but not as good for his scoring. I just wonder what, there's rumblings that he may not be happy. I wonder what's going on. I'm not trying to freak out about Richarlison because I love him and I think he works his ass off for the club, but it's just weird. I don't think that Everton can get where they want to get by the end of the season if he doesn't start scoring goals. I think there's a ceiling for us, but what do you make of it?
I think I'm not too concerned about the goal scoring.
Progressive presents Married to Your Home.
If you want to leave me for another house, I totally understand.
House? Where's this coming from?
It's just, I know there's some newer homes on the market.
I didn't even know that, because I'm not looking.
I bet those other houses don't have a crack in their foundations.
You know that crack doesn't bother me.
No matter how much you already love your house, you'll love it more knowing you could save big bundling your home and auto with Progressive. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and third-party insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
Be scoring more. But I think if you look at the first game against Tottenham, he probably could have had 2 goals, should have had 2 goals.
Oh, yes, yes.
But he played really well for the rest of the game. He messed up those 2 chances, but for the rest of the game, he played really well and he was at his usual level. I think you're right. You want your players, all you ask of your players is to be better than they were last season. So every season needs to be improved. Now, Calvert-Lewin's done that every single season he's been at the club.
Yeah.
Charlison was on the same sort of path. Obviously, this season, he is playing in a slightly different position to most of last season, where he was playing a lot as the striker last season, or as the striker in a two with Calvert-Lewin. So that could diminish his goal return a bit this season. I think the way we've got to look at it is he's a young player who's in a bad run of form. And I think the frustration is him not being able to find that level. And if he can't find that level, it could be because he's probably not had a break in 3 years. Since he's been at the club, he's constantly played football every week for Everton, every Brazil game, played in the summer tournament. He's had no break from football. This season, he's had a couple of injuries he's picked up. Not massive ones, but just enough.
Wear and tear, yeah.
Yeah, to see him out for a few games, which, you know, if he's feeling that, because there was that story that he told Ancelotti he was fine because he wanted to play for Brazil when he was actually injured.
Yeah.
I think there may have been some fallout with the two of them because since then, you know, maybe a loss of trust between the two. So that's why you get in the situation like Matt described at the Chelsea game, where Ancelotti and Richarlison were giving each other stick for about 5 or 10 minutes until he said, do you want me to bring you off? Which is quite telling in itself that Ancelotti didn't just drag him off. He gave him the option because he knows he's got the potential to unlock a game, even if he's having a bad game. To be fair, he's not had many bad games for us.
Well, no, it proves it that we only broke the curse, 3 weeks ago of not winning a game of Alston.
Yeah. So, you know, he's been integral for 2 years now, but in that time, he's barely been injured and he's not had a break from football. I think this season, if you look at it in that respect, this could have been coming all along. The fact that he's got a season where his form dips, his fitness dips, and it's just a kind of a perfect storm, isn't it? For a player who gives everything, gives 100% every game, if he can't give that, that's going to affect how he plays. So, being a fella of a certain age, we went through a game of football the other week, just before Christmas, in the break, Christmas and New Year. Some of the Blue Room, some of the Turn lads went for a game of five-a-side outside. Now, there's things I want to do on the pitch and there's things I see. I can't do them physically.
Right.
Or if I do them, I'm done for about 10 minutes. I can do a couple of sprints and then I'm done. If you sort of take that to a player like an elite player who's injured and he can't reach his level, it's frustrating when you're crap like me and you can't reach the level you used to. So for a player who's sort of in his peak and he can't do the things that he could last season because he's injured, because he's tired, whatever, that is really going to affect his game. I'm not particularly worried, to be honest. I just think he is in a bad run of form. And, you know, he's a young player and this is going to happen. I guess I'm just relieved that Calvert-Lewin's been scoring this season and we are getting the goals from elsewhere. We've not relied on him too much this season. Like, I think he scored, him and Calvert-Lewin got 13 each last season or something.
Yeah.
So they kind of split the goals evenly between them. That's not happened this season. We could be in a better position if it had. But I'm not too worried at the minute. And I'm not yet going to buy into the fact that he's unhappy. I would suggest it's more frustration. Obviously, I don't know. That's just
conjecture
on it. But I'd like to think it's probably more frustration at how this season's going for him.
But
as you say, he did sort of give us that window of this season, didn't he? And said, do you know what? I might leave next summer. Which at the time we were all like, well, do you know what? If he's going to leave, if he gives us another season like this, we can't really complain. He's given us 3-4 good years then. If he moves on to bigger and better things, good luck to him. But you kind of think the chances of that happening now have diminished massively.
Yeah. Yes.
If a player's going to get poached from us, it's going to be Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah. 100%.
If someone's looking for a striker, they're going to be looking at him now.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing too, is that Richarlison, whether he meant to or not, you know, he put a bullseye on his own back when he essentially alluded to the idea that, and I think he sort of took for granted, like most confident athletes do, that he's going to replicate his production, or if not exceed it, from the previous few seasons, and probably thought, you know, but by making those comments, or at least those comments getting out about giving it one more year. Now, I will tell you that if Everton make the Champions League, I think that all bets are off. Even if he was having a great season, I don't think Richarlison goes anywhere at that point. If there is a silver lining to this, to your point, Les, I think it makes it less likely that he goes to, you know, somewhere, because even if a club like a Barcelona or Real Madrid, you know, something like that, thought, hey, we still believe in his talent, but we'll just pay a little less to get him because he just came off of a struggling season. Everton's not going for that because I think he's more valuable to Everton because Everton understands that even if he scores 5 goals this season, that he's worth keeping. And I think they'll try to keep him, you know, but they certainly won't sell for a low, if you know, at the kind of basement of his value. I think that with Richarlison, I because I'm not trying to start any kind of drama here, because I don't subscribe to this idea that we can be armchair psychiatrists and look at guys and say, well, they frown a lot, so therefore they're unhappy and they don't care, or they, you know, Moyes Keane got a lot of that, and I still resent that quite a bit.
It's like the Hammers conspiracies the other week. Because he was out injured and didn't put any posts up or just
he just doesn't. Cause
and
when
then because Carlo kept saying a few weeks, there was some big conspiracy that Hammers had dropped off the PDF.
And that's, you know, I think it was more of a almost a silly, half-hearted joke about how Hammers didn't play in December because that's his vacation time or whatever. But look, Hammers is the kind of guy, from all indications, who basically just he has a big social media following, but he doesn't necessarily post all the time. And if he's not playing, like when if he's out of the lineup, you can bet that he's probably, it's not a lack of support for his own teammate, he just is like, I think his brain turns off to football. He is a go to training, go to the match, and goes home to his wife and kids kind of boring guy, which is probably what's going to extend his career because he just doesn't seem to care about anything else. But I think with Richarlison, it's a few little things, and I'm more concerned about a situation, and this is all speculative, but you know, the whole thing with the blow up with Carlo on the pitch a little bit, and then the really odd exchange he had with Gylfi Sigurdsson about taking that penalty.
Was the frustration seeping through.
Yeah, and there's a fine line between a guy who is a player who is so competitive that they're gonna get edgy when things aren't going their way because they've just got that internal fire in them, and you love that about players. But there's a fine line between that and being that guy in a game where you're going to win, where you're winning, or you're, you know, right in the cusp of winning, or you're in the middle of a team that's succeeding. And you don't want to be the guy that's the quote, you know, that's complaining or seeming to complain about your goal scoring when the whole team is doing well. I'd never have subscribed to this idea where Richarlison is any kind of problem child, and I'm certainly not saying that now. I just feel like he's got to get a goal or two to get himself going. But I also think, too, that it would be naive of us to say that the goal scoring doesn't matter. It matters. It matters because for all the great things he does, he is judged as a superstar Brazilian striker by his goals, whether that's fair or not. Look, they're different situations, but I used to say the same thing about Calvert-Lewin. I'm like, look, I love how hard he tries. I love his passing. I love how he holds up the ball. But if he's not going to score goals, he only has a limited life as a starting striker on a good team. Well, now he scores. And so therefore he could be a starter on a really good side. I mean, but that's the thing is Richarlison, I feel like it's just something I'm keeping an eye on, but I think that we've been really fortunate to get by. Cause let me put it this way, guys, right now, we ended the game the other night in fourth. And since we don't play again for like 2 months or however long with all these cancellations, who knows where we'll be in the table by then. But let me just put it this way. Let me ask it this way. Would the discussion about Richarlison right now that we're having be different if Everton were in 10th?
Yeah.
Would have to be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, of course it would be.
Because you'd be like, well, look, you know, our one of our highest paid players, most high profile players in scoring. So right now we have this benefit of playing well and doing well enough without his goals. But I will say Calvert-Lewin hasn't scored in 5 games, and that's not a criticism of Calvert-Lewin because that guy has just done everything.
No.
But he's going to go through patches where he doesn't score for a bit. He can't carry the whole load. No one can. So every Iwobi goal, every Doucouré goal, every goal that's from a non Calvert-Lewin is to me really gold, and it's important. But I think that those goals, or from Michael Keane or Yerry Mina, whoever is getting those goals that are not from a guy you expect, I think those are like gold. Those are the differences between the good teams and the elite teams. If Richarlison starts scoring like he can and Calvert-Lewin continues to score the way he has been, then those goals scored by Iwobi, Doucouré, Keane, Mina, whomever, become the difference between a draw and a win. We've been able to do a lot of winning this season without Richarlison's goals, but I don't think that we get to the Champions League, for instance, without. And I'm, you guys know, I'm very bullish on us being able to make the Champions League just because I think it's a weird enough season. There's, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal, or, you know, and I think there's a real chance here, but everyone says the only way Everton's going to do it is if A, we stay have enough players fit, and B, enough things, quote, fall right. Well, one of those big things falling right is Richarlison starting to score again.
But definitely, because even look the other night, so he couldn't play a full game, and Dom was out, so we had no striker. So if he's not scoring, we're relying on Dominic for the whole season if we don't get somebody in this window, because obviously, like, Tosin's not going to be getting us to the Champions
Moise
League,
Keane's
is he?
Never coming back.
So that's the you need to start like thinking about, because if we don't bring a striker, and we started a game the other night with a striker.
What do you make of that, Hannah? I think that shows a
brilliant manager.
Well, no. What I'm saying is what did you make of the other night starting without a striker when you had both? Because here's the thing. I'm oversimplifying this, but generally what you say is if a guy is fit enough to be on the bench, generally speaking, he can play a part. So it seemed odd to me to have both Richarlison and Cenk on the bench and not start either of them. And I understand the context of having played 120 minutes. Tosin had played 120 minutes or whatever. Fine. And he hadn't played enough. Maybe he just was knackered is the word. Yes. He was just knackered. It's funny when I say it, isn't it? But Richarlison, like, I just wondered, is he carrying a knock? Like, I just hope it's that he was carrying a knock. I guess I hope that versus the alternative, which is that Carlo just decided not to start him, which that doesn't seem right at all either. What do you make of the other night? Why did Richarlison not just start the game?
I assumed he was carrying a knock because if he was fully fit, he would have played against Rotherham, or he would have played. So he wasn't even on the bench, was he, against Rotherham? I don't think. He would have played some part in that game because that was the ideal situation to get those goals that he needs. You know what I mean?
He wanted to play though, didn't he? Yeah. Like, did you notice the tweet he put out? Yeah, like right after it was confirmed he wasn't playing, he looked.
Yeah, weird. So he would have been, but that's what I'm saying. He's at a point sort of now where he can't play games because he's getting these niggly little injuries. And I think if we need to rest him for games like Rotherham to try and get him fully fit and up to speed. The way Ancelotti was saying about James as well, you know, we could bring him back, but we'd sooner just leave him out, get him fully fit, and then bring him back. Yeah. I also think with the other night as well, I honestly think the game plan was to try and contain Wolves for as long as we can. I know they're without Jimenez, so that's a massive blow to them. But their midfield was like, that was a really good midfield they put out. I think the sort of theory was between playing Sigurdsson, that sort of horrible false nine position was, and he would get back and he just naturally play as another midfielder and then be up front if we needed them to be, which he wasn't because he can't really run, but he did.
He almost scored though when he came on. Like, he should have probably scored in that game, didn't he? He had like a kind of a semi breakaway there and he just didn't get Richarlison when he came on. I felt like he could.
Oh, I'm talking about Sigurdsson,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was talking about Sigurdsson. So I think he was there to provide that sort of extra midfielder and then a striker if we do break. So I think it was a lot about containment. So I can see why he did it, especially with, you know, Tosin being knackered after the weekend and Richarlison maybe not being fully fit. But if you look towards the end of that game, Richarlison was pretty integral to us seeing that game out when he came on. So he was winning little fouls and, you know, he was making a nuisance of himself. And I think that's how he gets back to his best. It's a shame because he's not kicked on from the Leicester goal, which I think we all thought he would. So he set up a goal after 30 seconds against Fulham on his first game back. Didn't really kick on from there, but then the team didn't because we played terrible in that game and then for the rest of the month. Then there was the Leicester goal, which was obviously vital for the win, but he didn't really kick on performance-wise after that. I think we just got to see how it goes now. But I'm not too concerned. I think there was numerous reasons why he didn't start the other night. I think it was to do with game plan and fitness. But I'm not too concerned. I'm trying to keep it calm.
Sure.
As you said, we do need him, and you know, if he can end this season well, if he can hit a good run of form to the end of the season, you know, we could do some damage in this league.
Yeah. Just think we need those goals. I mean, I'm not trying to overly complicate it. I just think that, you know, right now we've been, hey, no complaints. I mean, what a season. I told Matt the other day, like, it's so refreshing to get on here and do this when we can talk about supporting a good team for once.
This,
I mean,
the
it's
first
just
time
been
in my life that I've
yeah.
had this oh, excitement God. Talking about yeah.
this. Doesn't it make the games feel different, though? Every game, though, because it really matters. It's a little bit more stressful, and it's not something we're used to.
It's having, like, an expectation of yourself now rather than just expecting the worst and being like, oh,
yeah, but I expect Everton. Good things to happen. I generally now expect good things to happen. I don't have this dread that I mean, look, there's always a little dread in a game with fine margins like football, but I think that the dread of what's going to go wrong has been replaced with what could go really well today. Who could score for, who's going to have that performance today? Who's going to be Michael Keane today? Who's going to be, you know, whatever. Yeah.
I'm getting into like an hour into games now. You know, we're doing well. We're holding our own. Maybe we're in front. Maybe we're looking like we could get in front. And it's like a different kind of pressure. It's like, oh, come on, we can do this. Please, come on, just do something right. Just like will them on to be good and not to just not be shit. It's different. It's a different way of looking at it, isn't it?
It's like I said this to my mum, because my mum's a massive Red, and I said to her weeks ago, I said, like, I get it now, like, I understand what that feeling's like to just be like euphoric watching your team. I was like, I've never had that. I had, obviously, with Lukaku and like Stones, and then I had a period where it was exciting, but not to this extent. So it's like changed it altogether. But I just want to add on Richarlison, the only reason we're all saying this is because we all want him to smash it. Like, that's the only reason.
Absolutely.
We're talking about it so prematurely because we all are so invested and love this lad so much. So that's why after two games, we're all like flapping a bit because we're proper invested in how much we adore him.
Yeah. Hey, you guys know me well enough. And if you're listening to this, if you've heard me on the Blue Room long enough, I mean, I'm not prone to just suddenly giving up on guys too fast or anything like that, or saying, oh gosh, this is hopeless. There's certainly been cases where there've been players where I wasn't necessarily convinced they would ever become stars or what have you. Like, I've always been kind of skeptical about Tom Davis or Calvert-Lewin at a period, or Michael Keane. And I love being proven wrong, because if I'm being proven wrong in those scenarios, it means that one of the players of the club that I love and support is doing well. With Richarlison, he's just, I mean, God, he's probably been my favorite player since he came. I mean, I love everything about him. I love the effort. I love the snarl. I love just how competitive he is. But when a player becomes important, as he has become to us because of everything he represents on the pitch, but most notably all the goal scoring, that also brings with it a certain amount of burden, which that burden for him is, you know, if he is a goal scorer, which I believe he is, he's got to score goals, and we need more from him. And I just think it's been an interesting season to witness a guy like him struggling to score while the rest of the team is doing so well. I don't think that's anything about him. I just think it's a fascination more than anything else. And I'll be fascinated to see how it ends up. But, you know, hey, the last thing I'll end with is we had the game against Villa suspended on Sunday. We don't play another game until the 24th, which is the Sheffield Wednesday. It's going to be a Sunday night 8 p.m. kick for the FA Cup, which I can only guess they moved it to Sunday because they wanted to give a buffer day there somehow, maybe to Sheffield or to us. Not to us, but I don't really know why.
Wednesday have got the next two games called off.
Yeah.
So they've got the COVID hit as well. So I think they're missing a couple of games.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that we're the only, like, we've had two of our games for now, like, the other teams, yeah. like, and we're, and not, it's none of our players, like, it seems quite speaking.
Yeah, and it's not our players.
So it's quite bizarre, isn't it, that we've had two games, and then this could potentially be a first, if not from...
I think Villa's going to be three behind, though, or are they going to be, like, three games behind, like, great. I'm more, right now, so, look, there is... People have astutely pointed out there will come a consequence of this, which is some congestion in the fixture list, which is only exacerbated even more by the gung-ho nature of the Euros saying that we're not going to move the dates, even though I think the Euros will probably, they may be forced to move some of that. Who knows? It just depends on how things go. But I think for right now, I'm going to try to look at this in a glasses half full sort of way, which is that, hey, this is more time for rest for players that, you know, not all of them need the rest, but guys like, you know, I think about the players who've been playing almost every game, Keane and Mina, especially Doucouré for sure, gives Allen, of course, Doucouré is going to have a paid vacation while he's out on his yellow card, but which, by the way, I hate that, Les, and you'll have to explain it to me. Why? I thought it reset after the calendar new year. Is this because we started the season late? Because usually it's like you, if you get five yellow cards, you miss a game, but it resets after the turn of the calendar or something. Like,
but it was an all comps as well, and now it's not an all comps.
No, it's not.
So dumb.
I hate that. Yellow cards aren't. Yeah, they just shifted everything for no reason.
It used to be that the FA Cup game could be the game that counted as the suspension game, but not anymore. So now he's going to miss... So, if that's true, why can't Doucouré play against Sheffield Wednesday, or can he? And then not play against Leicester, because it's the competition. Yeah. He can't be suspended two games, so he could play against Sheffield Wednesday.
Yeah. He can play in the FA Cup, but he can't play against Leicester.
Okay.
But in an ideal world, you'd rather have him on for Sheffield Wednesday and be back for Leicester. Sure. So I think that's everyone's beef, because it's a new rule. Basically,
hey, I want a trophy, Hannah. So I think it's very important. They put it, but no, I look. I'm trying to view this as glasses half full, but it's, you know, we've had this whole discussion. We're about to end here. This has been awesome, but you know, we've done all this without really talking about any transfer rumors of note. It's January. I think it's a weird one, guys, because we are in a situation where we're talking about aspirations and Everton having this chance. I really hope that we don't rue the fact that we didn't push for maybe one more player in January, as much as I know money is this and getting good players in January is hard and all those conventional things. It's just the things we were just talking about with Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin and what have you. I feel like we're so susceptible to an injury really knocking us off. And so I'm really just hopeful that I've got to trust Marcel Brands and Carlo Ancelotti. I feel like they probably know what they're doing, but it's going to get tight here. But I guess in the short term, this schedule interruption here will give some players a chance to rest, and hopefully we'll have Calvert-Lewin and soon Allen and Doucouré, you know, fresh Doucouré back as well, and we can push on from there. All right, guys. Man, that was a cool, almost 80 minutes today of solving the world's problems.
And answering all our DMs.
Yeah. Well, DM sliding is going to be the name of this episode, I'm sure. But my thanks to Les Roberts and Hannah Farrell. I appreciate you guys both spending time with me. We do not have a post-match this weekend because there's no game, but I know we're going to have mailbag this weekend on Blue Room Extra. The Subs Weekly that just came out with Dave and Matt and Carl Roper is a fantastic listen. I always say every week that it's one of my favorite listens of the week, along with all the other content that you will have to peruse. We will be back for more Kickabout next week. Talk to you guys later.
Northern Tool and Equipment isn't just a store. It's a problem solver's paradise. Fully stocked with the right professional grade tools and fully staffed with experts who have the right answers. Problem solved.
Northern Tool and Equipment Summer Sale is on now. Stop in and save up to 50% on pressure washers, sprayers, generators, fans, lawn and garden equipment, and more. Hundreds of deals in store or at northerntool.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.